Support for this podcast comes from Outdoor Supply Hardware, inviting listeners to Osh's big anniversary sale celebration, May 20th through the 26th, featuring daily deals, $15,000 in giveaways, 20% off store-wide on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot more. Learn more at osh.com.
From KQED.
I like no milk with the granola, with the nuts. Yeah.
Just plain granola.
Yeah, I do that. Yeah.
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with KQED politics correspondent Marisa Lagos. Today on The Breakdown, California Target Book is a goldmine of information for campaigns, journalists, election officials, organized labor, and business groups. For three decades, Target Book has provided nonpartisan information on election districts, voter registration, campaign contributions, candidate profiles, and a whole lot more. Marva Diaz is the new publisher of Target Book. She is the first woman and first Latino to have that position in the publication's 30-year history, and she joins us to talk about the value of accurate data across the political spectrum. Marva Diaz, welcome to Political Breakdown.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's begin with a big picture question. When you take into account all the results of the March primary, you know, the presidential, the Senate primaries, the ballot measures, everything, how do you see the political landscape right now in California based on those results, you know, mood of the voter and so on?
I think what you saw, even with the very, very low turnout that we saw, you saw that people are struggling. I think that you saw that people are upset. People are wanting to see real solutions. And I think you saw that in a number of different races, as well as the ballot measure results that came with Prop 1. And I think that when I talk to other political consultants and other people that are running races, everyone's expecting November to have a much better turnout, to have a much better showing at the polls. But I don't think that there's going to be a huge shift in terms of voter attitudes of them thinking that the world is now so much better, right? I don't think these other new voters will think that things are all peachy. I think that there's going to be a whole host of people still upset about a whole host of things, mostly the economy and making sure that their voices are heard at the polls.
I mean, that's interesting to hear because I think the narrative we're hearing from Democrats largely is, hey, you know, a bigger electorate benefits us. It's going to be more progressive. It's going to be less conservative. I mean, that actually could still comport with what you're saying. They just might be pissed off progressives.
Agree. Yes, I think that that's all true. I think they're both going to be true. I think there's going to be more Democrats. I think they will be voting more progressive. But I think their underlying attitudes are they're hurting. You know, houses are expensive. A lot of times, you know, those older Democrats are now, you can see them being concerned that maybe their kids can't live by them, and you know, when they are ready to buy a house. Maybe there's no houses for them to buy. How expensive is it to feed their families every week? I mean, I'll be honest, I'm a single mom with two teenage boys, and they eat so much.
Girl, I feel
so
you.
So much. That, you know, I kind of feel that same way. I'm an average voter. I'm a Democrat. I've always been a Democrat. I'll vote Democrat. But, you know, things are expensive.
You mentioned Proposition 1, which, of course, was the $6.38 billion bond measure meant to address homelessness and a lack of housing and people with mental illness. And, you know, the conventional wisdom before the election is that that was going to sail through because some of the polls showed it with quite a lot of support. Governor Newsom, of course, put his weight behind it, and it barely passed. What is that sort of an example of what you're describing? I mean, what is that? And what does that say about November, where there could be other bond measures or other kinds of tax
measures? Especially when homelessness is such a huge issue for voters.
Totally. I mean, I agree. There's a couple things there. One, it was a super low turnout, right? The Democrats that they were counting on and wanted to see come out, they just didn't come out. So I think that's one. Two, I mean, I think that, yes, homelessness is a big priority for voters, but I think that when you say homelessness, are you also including housing, right? I mean, my kids are 19 and 16. I live in California. I was born and raised here, but I don't know if my kids will be here. I don't know if they'll be able to live in California. And I think that's what a lot of voters are trying to understand when they're voting now, especially on something like this. Yes, homelessness is a problem, but how much housing is also included in that, and how are we then helping those families that are struggling? I mean, I've always lived in California, like I said, but if my kids decide they're going to move to another state, then I will probably follow them because I want to be near them.
Well, and as you know, Democrats rule the roost in Sacramento. They have supermajorities in both chambers. The Republicans haven't elected a statewide official since 2006. And Republicans keep saying, well, if you're unhappy with the way things are in California, blame the Democrats because they have all the levers of power. Why do you think that hasn't translated at the ballot box? Or maybe it has. I don't know.
You know, I think there's a lot of things that contribute to that. I don't think it's just, I think that's very simple to say we can all blame the Democrats because they're in the supermajority, but I think it's more complicated than that, to be honest with you. There's a whole host of things that go into the analyses on the policy side. I tend to focus on the political side and what goes before the voters in terms of ballot measures. I think that the voters need to see something before them that is a real solution, so that they can approve it and move it forward. I think that's what the voters are saying at the polls these days. I think they said it in March. I think they'll say it in November. They want real solutions, something tangible that they can point to and say, yes, this will work to solve the problem.
I want to ask you about a particular candidate race. We have an open Senate seat. I mean, arguably for the first time in like my lifetime, it feels like, just because Kamala Harris was such a cakewalk and Alex Padilla got appointed before elected as an incumbent. Yeah. So we have this open seat in Dianne Feinstein. Adam Schiff, Democrat, ran ads propping up the Republican in the race, Steve Garvey, a former Dodgers player. It worked. He's in the runoff. What are your takeaways from that? And is there a world in which Schiff's sort of political machinations in the spring affect Democrats or even him in the fall?
I cannot think of a scenario where Garvey will win. I think that the primary was so well played by Schiff and making sure he faced the right opponent for November.
By right, you mean the one that's easiest to beat.
The one that he could beat, yes. His right opponent. That I just don't see a way for Garvey to pull through.
Will that be a race? I mean, what do you think that'll look like for voters?
Yeah, and what does it mean for turnout, if anything?
Yeah.
I think that Garvey has an opportunity to energize Republicans across the state to get them to turn out in key districts where Republicans can win, especially in swing seats. I think that it's one of those things where if I'm the Republican strategist, I'm going to look at where are we spending these Garvey dollars to boost down ticket candidates.
All right. We are going to take a short break. And when we come back, much more with California Target Book publisher Marva Diaz. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Outdoor Supply Hardware, inviting listeners to Osh's big anniversary sale celebration, May 20th through the 26th, featuring daily deals, $15,000 in giveaways, 20% off store-wide on Saturday and Sunday, and a lot more. Learn more at osh.com.
There are true monsters in the world, people doing horrible things with impunity. Still, every once in a while, there is born a monster hunter. On the next Snap Judgment, The Road to Boito. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos, and we're talking with Marva Diaz. She's the publisher of California Target Book. And pretty much anyone who works in politics, government, and issue advocacy can benefit from its data and research. It is a treasure trove of data and information. And Marva, I know this was created by one Democrat, Al Pross, and one Republican, Alan Hoffenblum, some 30 years ago. And it is nonpartisan. And, you know, a moment ago you were saying, I'm a Democrat, I vote Democrat. So how do you think about the importance of maintaining that nonpartisanship? And how do you do that given that you're a Democrat?
You know, it's a good question. I practice it every single day. So one of my companies outside of the California Target Book is I'm a strategist. I consult for politicians, candidates, nonprofits, business associations, you name it. And so I definitely have a point of view and personal opinions. California Target Book is all data driven. So all public information that's on campaigns and elections and in a neutral presentation for all of our subscribers. The data is fascinating. I am a nerd and I love looking at numbers and trends and things like that. But Target Book goes even beyond that. It goes beyond just pulling information for our subscribers. We do have a team of editors from all sorts of backgrounds, from the left, from the right, people in labor, people from business, Democrats, Republicans, you name it. They're all on the team. And we work on providing our subscribers some insights that things that they may not have known or things that they may not have considered so that there is texture to the data mm-hmm. as well.
Can you talk about how that's changed over the years? I know you took over fairly recently, but I'm assuming you've talked with your predecessors. And if folks don't know him, Rob Pyers is the person doing a lot of that data crunching at the Target Book. But I mean, just the amount of data is so much more vast now than it must have been even a decade ago when we think about and even just the changes, right, in terms of like voting by mail. Like, talk about how that's impacted the work you all do.
It's insane. Target Book. So this is my 27th year in California politics. Target Book was created 30 years ago. When I was a young staffer, part of my job was running around to all the departments and agencies, waiting in line, making copies of financial reports or whatever, going back to the office, typing it all up for our clients and my boss. And now it's all on the Target Book site. So that's why Target Book was created. But now it's also all digitally online. What we do is just take all the information that anyone can get because it's all public, but we can compile it and we organize it for you so that it's an easy, digestible form, right? So I do speak to the predecessor that had my job before me, Derry Schrago, who has been a great mentor of mine. Obviously, the book needs to mature and evolve with the information flow. So and you're right. There is so much more information. In fact, I'll be honest. I was an editor for 5 years and then I took over as publisher and I was astounded by what I still hadn't noticed in the 5 years in terms of data. So there's a whole host of things. I want my mission now is not only to maintain it and have it grow and provide more services, but also highlight some of those data things that our subscribers may want to know, but they don't know it's there. Mm-hmm. And that's why our editors come in with these insights and tips for our subscribers.
Well, in addition to the flood of information that's available, there's also, of course, a lot of misinformation. How do you, you know, I know you're all data driven and some of it, like census information, is just very straightforward. But, you know, do you see yourselves as kind of an antidote to some of the misinformation that's out there? And how do you protect yourselves from being vulnerable to some of those things?
Absolutely. A lot of the calls I get, I'll be honest, from reporters is they made an assumption or they're looking at reports, right? And they may, a lot of it is IEs, right? Independent expenditures. They want to understand what are those large interested parties spending in campaigns to influence voters. And a lot of times they may look at it and it's confusing and they make an assumption on how much money was spent or maybe it was spent along these three districts, right? And a lot of what I do is fact check for them. So I'll say, yes, there was that IE, but actually only half of it was spent in this legislative race and the rest was spent over here or things like that. So it's, I do feel as though, to your point, that I'm kind of serving as the fact checker on all these assumptions that are being made out there in election land.
Yeah. Switching gears a little, I want to ask you, I mean, we are famous in California for our ballot initiatives, infamous, mm-hmm. you might say, especially for as voters, we often are overwhelmed.
Why am I voting on this?
But there have been some changes in recent years that allow initiative sponsors to take them off the ballot later than they used to be able to, that allow the legislature to hold hearings. And we've seen this kind of play out a couple times where, you know, an interest group has this ballot measure and they kind of use it to leverage some sort of policy or legislation. Right now, there's a big debate happening, for example, over Proposition 47, the 2014 criminal justice reform, and groups including DAs and some retailers have put a change to that on the ballot. And the governor and legislature is debating their own changes and I think hoping to head that off. I guess, like, just watching all this, like, how do you think these changes are working, you know, for democracy? And how has it sort of changed the dynamic of some of these conversations around ballot measures?
You know, it's such a good question. I think that I think there's a few things to think about when we talk about ballot measures. One, ballot measures are to be decided by voters, right? And these deals that may happen to pull a ballot measure off are being talked about by the legislature, which is, you know, they're elected by voters, but they may have a different way of coming about their decisions. So I think it's a needed effort. I think it's needed to have this ability to have a ballot measure and have it placed on before the voters and have these conversations with the legislature to see what may be a better deal for everyone all around. I think the more conversation generally, the better. I don't like having closed doors. So I think that although there's a lot of negative feelings about it and from some people's point of view, I think we actually get better policy out of it.
Interesting. Well, you say, you don't like closed doors, but there was one of the big, you know, debates that has popped up around the negotiations over the fast food wage compromise bill that the governor signed. It has to do with NDAs, non-disclosure agreements. SEIU, the big labor union, asked everybody who was in the room, you know, from the restaurant industry and so on, to sign these NDAs before they came to a deal that they then sent to the legislature for consideration. What do you make? You know, there was an effort by one assembly member, Vince Fong, to ban them altogether. Like, what are your thoughts about NDAs? Are they appropriate? Are they not appropriate? Do they help? Do they hurt?
So that's an interesting question also, because I haven't spoken to anyone who has said they signed it, right? And I've asked, so I have, is it real?
That's kind of been my idea. Is this much ado about nothing?
They can't say about
it. There is no secret in Sacramento, right? There is just no secret. Everyone shares everything. If I want to start a rumor and I say something, it'll spread around Sacramento. And then within the next hour, it'll be corrected, right? There's nothing secret in Sacramento. So it seems odd to me that I haven't spoken to anyone that said, oh my gosh, Marv, yeah, I had to sign it. Isn't that crazy? So I don't know what to think yet, because I don't know if it's real. Now, if it is real, that's a different topic to talk about.
Yeah, what do you mean? Like, if it is real, what?
And if it's real, among whom?
If it's real amongst, did that really happen? Is that something that really happened? Okay, well, then we should have a conversation as to why that really happened. But my understanding is that's already illegal.
For lawmakers, you mean for people in government to be part of an NDA, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are outside groups, supposedly. Yeah,
and then, but even then, that raises a whole host of questions. So if the outside groups had an NDA, how did they negotiate then once the elected officials got in the room? There's just so many questions I have in terms of the logic of it. I just can't even answer.
Fair.
I want to ask you about, you know, we've seen so many special elections in California. Yeah. You know, term limits, of course, push some legislators out, and then they run for Congress. We've seen retirements, and people want to move up the ladder. And oftentimes, these special elections are they're off year, and they're, you know, in the middle of the summer or all kinds of odd times. They cost money. The turnout is low. Is there any talk about, you know, changing that process so that there's a better way to do it? I mean, some people like ranked choice voting, which, you know, can't be used in federal elections. But, you know, what are your thoughts about all these specials?
So many special elections. Well, as a political professional, I would say
good for business.
That's job security. but seriously, it is. It's really expensive to voters. I think that there's political sensitivities there, right? Depending upon the seat, the governor gets to pick when the special election is. If he has a candidate he's supporting over somebody else, it probably makes sense that he'd want to keep that control. I think it's going to be hard to make real meaningful changes, but yeah, I agree. It's hard. And especially since term limits and everybody plays these musical chairs of running for different offices, makes it really, really hard. And it's confusing to voters. I mean, my parents live in San Jose. They vote in every election. They usually work the polls. And even as engaged and educated as they are, they'll call me and say, what's going on here? Why am I voting for this again? And so I feel like it's one of those things where the poor voters are just constantly having ads and text messages and emails bombarded on them. They just have to, unfortunately, right now, get used to it.
Yeah. And also in a lot of these situations, it does seem like folks decide, you know, they kind of game it out. They decide when to step back. And we've seen this in local elections, too, where DAs, happen to give up their seats so the Board of Supervisors can name a successor. It does seem like, I guess, how do you think about that trade off between, like, say, a seat being empty for a while and like whether voters should get a chance to actually weigh in?
Well, we even saw that in redistricting, right? I mean, redistricting was such a beast, and they really made some drastic changes where one of the seats still that we will fill it for the first time now this November, but it's been empty because it was in the off cycle. I think it's a disservice to the voters when they don't have an elected representative. They don't have someone fighting for them and representing them. It's nice that there's still constituent services that are being provided in those instances. But it's a disservice because they're not being as represented as maybe their neighbor down the street. Mm.
I know you said you don't really focus on, you know, federal national elections, but a question about the Senate situation. You know, we've gone from having two Northern California women senators, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, to going now to having two men, depending on, you know, which man it's going to be. We don't know, but we assume it's going to be Adam Schiff and Alex Padilla, both from L.A.
Yeah.
What do you make of both that, you know, geographical shift southward and also the gender change?
The gender change is really hard for me, right? It's I was a very young kid when Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer won together, and it made a huge impression on me. It was one of the reasons I decided to go into politics, right? It was this is an area where women could succeed. I didn't have to be a stay-at-home mom or anything, with nothing against stay-at-home moms, where everybody emails me. But it was one of those things where if I felt as a young kid, a girl, that there were doors open to me in this field. So part of the thing, I really admire Padilla. I admire Schiff. I think they're going to do a great job. But part of me, a piece of me, is sad that younger women won't see a woman in that seat.
Well, you know, you are the first woman and first Latina to head the Target Book in its 30-year history. I mean, we're talking about representation here. How does it matter in a job like yours? And single mom of two boys. I got two boys, too. And I am terrified because they're already eating a lot, Marva. Like, I don't know how it's going to be in a couple years.
Let me just tell you right now to buy potatoes. They are the savior in my house. I'm like, you cannot have seconds until you finish that potato. No, it's a big deal. It's a different point of view, right? So when I joined the Target Book, I was the first female editor, and I was the first editor of color, and that was a big deal. And we started looking at things through a different lens because it was important to me to in particular, look at Latino voters and how they were impacting different races. And now with the now that I'm publisher and I've brought in a whole host of new editors, I'm really excited, and we're just launching. I just took over in December. The new editors were just announced this month, but I'm excited about the ideas and the research that we all want to do. And I think it could be really influential on a whole host of platforms, and hopefully for you guys, and keep everybody interested, and maybe those things will boost voter turnout and change policy too. We never know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for maintaining the tradition of great information with Target Book. We all in the newsroom rely on it, especially in election years, but even in off years. So thank you so much.
Of course. And thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Yeah. Marva Diaz is the publisher of California Target Book. And that is a wrap for Tuesday, April 30th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Seal Mahler. Our producer is Izzy Bloom. I'm Scott Schaefer, here with Marisa Lagos. Thank you so much for listening.
Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles. The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Did you ever wonder what it's like to live alone, hidden in the woods, not speaking to a single soul for 30 years? Or wander the desert, uncover a hidden well, and dive to the bottom of the deepest water hole for 2,000 miles? The Snap Judgment Podcast takes you there with amazing stories told by the people who live them, with an original soundscape that drops you directly into their shoes. Snap Judgment. Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.